Mr. Byers. Im Originaltitel heißt ihr Buch Perfidious Albion, Perfides Albion. Das war der Schmähruf der Franzosen gegen den Verrat Englands im 19. Jahrhundert. Ist Britannien denn wieder der Verräter heute, der Verräter Europas?
Well, I thought it was interesting to use a phrase that other countries have used about us as a way of perhaps reflecting on things that are happening within England and reflecting on our own behavior and our own ways of thinking. So to me, at the time I was writing the book, a lot of the rhetoric around Brexit, the rise of right-wing politics in Britain, it seemed to me that an awful lot of promises were being made and an awful lot of things were being distorted into new narratives, which I didn't think were based on truth. So I thought it was interesting to take that phrase and perhaps use it in a more domestic sense.
Der Brexit als Begriff taucht ja in Ihrem Buch nur ein einziges Mal auf, aber der ganze Roman ist doch von so einem Brexit-Gefühl durchzogen, hat man das den Eindruck. War das denn Ihr Vorhaben? Wollten Sie eine Post-Brexit-Novel schreiben?
Well, first of all, thank you for pointing that out. Lots of people feel that it's a post-Brexit novel, but it's not a novel that deals with Brexit directly, and you're absolutely right, it is only mentioned once. Obviously, when I began writing it, the referendum hadn't happened, so my interests weren't really around the mechanics of Brexit or what would happen if we left Europe, but rather in what I saw as an increasingly poisonous political and social atmosphere that we were increasingly living in, which I thought had been in some ways unleashed by the referendum. And my feeling at the time I was writing the book was that kind of cultural change, that kind of mainstreaming of right-wing rhetoric probably had gone so far that it would be difficult to rectify whether we remained in Europe or left Europe. So I suppose rather than being about Brexit itself, I hoped the book would be about what it feels like to live in England politically at the moment, what it feels like to be surrounded by an increasingly hateful atmosphere. Brexit's part of that, but I don't think it's all of that.
Und in welcher Atmosphäre man lebt, das sieht man an der fiktiven Stadt Edmondsbury, die in Ihrem Buch ihr Hauptschauplatz ist und die London als Metropole abgelöst hat. Was ist dort anders? Können Sie uns das mal bitte beschreiben?
I thought it'd be interesting to, given that a lot of the novel is concerned with technological change, you know, the arrival of the internet, social media, certain kind of new technological infrastructures, etc., and the ways in which those affect our discourse. I thought it'd be interesting to set the novel outside a main city, which I think is unusual for a novel dealing with the pace of technological change, and try and make the point that whether you live in a small town or a village, it's no longer possible really to live outside of these infrastructures. And, you know, the other point I wanted to make was almost a kind of joke in that with the rise of the internet and social media, in a sense, it can feel sometimes like we all live in a small town now, regardless of where we live. You know, lots of boundaries have collapsed, sense of distance has eroded. And so, in a sense, Edmondsbury is a kind of stand-in for this feeling of both localness and perhaps a sense of claustrophobia as well.
Dieser technologische Wandel, den Sie gerade erwähnt haben, wie stark beeinflusst der denn tatsächlich das Brexit-Gefühl, auch das ganz Reale, in dem Sie jetzt gerade leben und wir?
I think in several ways. I mean, first of all, as we now know, you know, since the book has come out, I mean, if you look at something like the Cambridge Analytica scandal, there's a sense in which the Brexit outcome, or, you know, certainly the way voting was managed and information was managed in the lead up to the referendum was very, very directly influenced by changes in communications technology. It's changed how people receive and share information. It's control. It's changed the flow of information. It's changed our ability to control the veracity of information, the quality of information that we receive. So I think on that level, it's had a very direct impact. But I also think it's contributed to a feeling of kind of constantly updated, constant stress, constant anxiety, and a feeling that rather than being a long-term political project, Brexit is something that is happening minute to minute as we all update ourselves constantly, you know, look for the latest news. And I wonder if that feeling of immediacy has in return affected the way that Brexit has been handled, because it has made it feel like an emergency when in fact it probably should have been a multi-year, carefully considered, slow-moving diplomatic project.
Sind denn Ihrer Meinung nach die Ideologien oder die festgefahrenen Positionen, die kaum noch zu überwindenden Gegensätze in Großbritannien stärker als in anderen Ländern?
I don't know if it's stronger than in other countries, but I think what happened very quickly is that Brexit, you know, leave and remain became these two receptacles for everyone to put all sorts of other political and social feelings. And so they became very immovable very quickly. You know, I think looking back, it's possible to imagine an alternative way of managing Brexit where after the referendum and the result became clear, all the extremes were taken off the table. So no deal was removed as an option and remain was removed as an option. And, you know, we spent the next couple of years really thrashing out the detail of a deal. But in fact, what happened is, you know, if anything, everyone moved more strongly towards their previous positions and kind of dug in and became more entrenched. And I think part of that is related to something which certainly is a global phenomenon, which is the, you know, increasing emphasis on this idea of strength in politics. So, you know, you can see people like Donald Trump marshal this idea just as much, but it's the idea that you should never negotiate, never back down, that you have to, in everything that you do politically, demonstrate how strong and confident you are in what you're doing. And I think that has created a rather poisonous culture where the aim is always to win and never to negotiate. And I think within that context, if you're always striving to win rather than reach an agreement, then it distorts what you're trying to achieve, because winning, in inverted commas, becomes its own objective rather than the thing you were striving to do in the first place.
Aber auch durch Ihren Roman stolpern ja Figuren, die zum irgendwie vom Typ her Nigel Farage erinnern könnte. Denn Boris Johnson zum Beispiel nicht auch eine gute Romanfigur sein?
I suppose anyone who has that level of kind of hubris and arrogance masking quite such a level of ineptitude would make a good character in a novel. But I suppose for me, the novel is less about, you know, targeting or satirizing specific individuals, because I feel that individuals come and go, and more about the ideas these people have and the way that those ideas are defended and disseminated. Because, you know, as I was saying before, my concern is that, you know, when Brexit is all over, the key players of Brexit might leave the stage. You know, Boris might not be prime minister anymore. Nigel Farage won't have anything to campaign for anymore. But the ideas that they have released and set in motion in the country, you know, for example, a rise in anti-immigrant sentiment, or the feeling that we can stand alone in the world, or this increasingly kind of small-minded, parochial attitude, those feelings are now very much in the mainstream. And, my concern is that the ideas of these people will live on longer than their political careers and actually prove far more stubborn and far more difficult to get rid of.
Sie haben, Sam Bayers, in einem Interview gesagt, in Großbritannien zu leben sei eine Art Experiment. Was denken Sie, wie dieses Experiment ausgehen wird?
I think the problem is we don't know how the experiment will end because we don't know what the aim of the experiment is anymore. You know, I think you look back, you take Brexit as an example. You know, David Cameron really agreed to have a referendum in the first place to placate his own party. There is no plan for what would happen if, you know, the result was that we leave Europe. And no one was ever asked to formulate a detailed account of what leaving would look like. So it's very hard to say where we will end up, because my concern now is that we don't really know what we won't know what we want. We don't really know why we're doing the things that we're doing. They've just become a kind of series of positions that we feel we have to take and that we can't extricate ourselves from. So I suppose it's not even really an experiment at this point. It's more like a continuous collective improvisation. And so, you know, we just don't know where that's going to end up.
Sam Bayers, vielen Dank für dieses Gespräch. Thank you very much, Mr. Bayers.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.